Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG Pod Overflow, the Cinephobe Cold Opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
You said the OG Pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG Pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing it, and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG Pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays, you're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like, because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora, he's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Hey, listener, Zach Harper here. Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. Here's how it works. The Pick'em game. Pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. How big, you ask? I'm so glad you asked that question, listener. You can win up to 100 times your money in a single night. Pick between 2 and 5 players, build a pick'em entry. You can also do rivals picks. You can put like Tyrese Haliburton and Jalen Brunson against each other, and whoever has more points, more assists, more rebounds, whatever you want to do, that is your rivals pick. I would maybe go with Jalen Brunson in these playoffs. By the way, in the regular season, Jalen Brunson, scoring tear, going higher on his point totals all the time. Joel Embiid, whenever he did actually play, higher on his scoring totals all the time. Victor Wembanyama, for the next 15, 20 years, here's a pro tip for you, take higher on the blocks. That's right. So you're probably wondering, how do you sign up? Oh my God, listener, you are full of good questions today. Sign up with the promo code DING, that's D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. $250, man, that's a lot. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the App Store. And don't forget to register with our code DING, D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick and first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. Must be 18 or older, 21 or older in Massachusetts, Arizona, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. Arizona 1-800-NEXT-STEP, that's 1-800-639-8783, or text NEXT STEP to 53342. New York, call the 24/7 HOPE line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the latest edition, Decision 2020 edition of the Woke Bros. Of course, I'm your co-host, Big Waz, a.k.a. Wosni Labre. Joined to that, I did that in my Haitian Creole accent because Miami, goddamn, y'all let me down, Miami. Little Haiti certainly didn't, but the rest of y'all let me down. Joining me as always, man, my brother, my partner, the wonderful, the beautiful, the bashful, Nando Vila. What's good, brother?
Well, you know, just living through another election, just another crisis of democracy in the world's oldest democracy, the United States of America. Just, having a series of panic attacks throughout the entire night, but I'm feeling good.
Exactly.
I'm feeling good.
And of course, my man Rob Lopez on the ones and threes so that we could blame him and the Latino vote for not delivering a landslide victory.
Hell yeah.
To the Democratic
Party. You fucking racist Latinos. That's going to be the new Russiagate, is that Latinos are the real racist. That's my take.
All right. So, as it stands, we're taping this at 3:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Wednesday afternoon, the afternoon after pretty much all the polls closed. It's looking like Joe Biden is going to hold on for a very narrow victory over Donald Trump. Votes are still being counted in in Michigan, Wisconsin. The votes are done. Biden won that by 20,000 votes, which is exactly the same margin that Trump won in 2016 over Hillary. They're still counting votes in Nevada, but that's basically been reliably blue forever now. Still counting votes in Arizona. Joe Biden has a sizable lead, which is basically the upset of the night. To my mind, Joe Biden, the Dems actually carrying a state that has been reliably red for a long time. Not a pipe dream state like Texas, not a pipe dream state like Georgia, not a pipe dream state, a legitimately red state, and the Dems actually flipped it, right? I think that's the one impressive victory of last night, I would say, what's happening in Arizona, because that came as a shock to me. But other than that, they're still counting votes in Pennsylvania. That's looking like it's going to come down to the wire, be very close. But because Biden is carrying the day in Michigan, in Wisconsin, and it's looking damn good for Arizona, he's going to squeak by in an election that many people thought that he would cruise to victory. Perhaps that was probably foolish and foolhardy to think that. But there's just so many thoughts. I just want to say my first thought, I think last night what I noticed for sure, it's not just how Biden underperformed in Miami-Dade amongst, that subset of people, which we've covered a decent amount on this show. And I think we've done a decent job, especially because Nando being a South Florida native himself. I'm surprised how terrible he did in the border towns in Texas. These towns are very, very, very heavily Mexican-American towns, brown towns, the type of towns that, quite frankly, the Democratic establishment takes for granted. These people, brown people, Latino, Latinx, I don't know what the hell we're calling people who are Puerto Rican, Peruvian, Dominican, Cuban, I don't know what we're calling them, but that's the only term that we have. These are the people that they take for granted. They got their clocks cleaned down there in Texas, which is an embarrassment, quite frankly. Like, Hillary Clinton just did way better 4 years ago. Just the idea that these counties would go for President Trump in such a major way is kind of wild. But Nando, man, just please jump in. I think that was my takeaway. Not that I think what comes out of it, what's gonna come out of it. And I talked about this. I did a quick Periscope, just some live Periscopes last night, just reacting to some of the stuff I was seeing on MSNBC, because that's what I was watching. There was an awkwardness about how they wanted to talk about the Latinx voter not voting blue, right? Because there's a sort of infantilizing way that they talk about minorities and people of color, right? Like, they don't talk about these minorities with any nuance, besides we're the not racist people. So therefore, if you care about not racist, which you should, because I guess racism is allegedly the most important topic in the world to these people, or allegedly, you should want to ride with us. We don't really care about specifically what your needs are. Just know that we'll never call you a wetback. We'll never call you a nigger. And so therefore, we love you. We love you, obviously, right? That's clearly been a strategy. But I'm watching MSNBC and I'm noticing there's an awkwardness that they have, because they can't really say anything about Latinx voters, because they deified people of color in such a way that you can't talk about them in any nuance or in a frank manner. And they can't, and they definitely, white people on MSNBC definitely can't go up there and say and admit a fucking basic truth that there are prejudices, yes, even within Latin communities, even within Indian American communities, like they're everywhere. Black communities, you name it, right? Like the only time actually they'll talk about black people being homophobic, they'll do that. They'll do that
sometimes,
one.
Yeah.
They'll do that one. But they just have a hard time processing these things. And I thought it was interesting to watch it on MSNBC. And I thought it was interesting for people, you know, because people were fighting me on Twitter. I know I'm fucking rambling right now, but people were fighting me on Twitter because I was insinuating. I was like, yo, the fact that you guys are calling Latinx voters non-white so cavalierly is kind of funny to me as a New York City native. And, you know, and Rob knows this because I've talked about this on Woke Bros all the time. Like the dynamic between Puerto Ricans, Dominicans, and black people in New York City is a very fraught one, right? And I'll tell you one thing. When people say Latinx identity is complicated, I tell you it's not complicated. They know they ain't black. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you that like right now for a fact. One thing Latinx people know, they are not black. You know, and whatever. And I know that there's a case of people who identify, who self-identify as Afro-Latina, all Latino and all of that stuff, which is great. And I love y'all. But the vast majority of Latinx people, one thing they will tell you, some people don't identify as white and some people do. And all of them have pride and all of that. But what they will tell your ass with the quickness, I know black poppy. I know black poppy. And so I think those dynamics seem to be catching a lot of corporate libs by surprise, and like the enthusiasm for Trump catches them by surprise, because I just think they don't, they, like when you're so rich and fancy, you don't have to know anything about the dynamics of Puerto Ricans and Dominicans and black people in the Bronx. You don't need to know. So you don't. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what's sort of clouding the very, very early discourse coming out of last night.
Yeah, when Trump won in 2016, the standard take amongst, if you were like a Democratic Party strategist or congressperson or whatever, the standard take was that Trump was a freak win and he won for two reasons. One, because Russia gave it to him, which is bullshit. Christ. And two, because just white people are too irremediably racist and they just voted for Trump out of pure racial resentment. Those two things are the reasons that they point to, and that's it. So what they spent the last 4 years doing is saying, telling people Trump is a Putin asset and he's irredeemably racist. What became clear in the early exit polls of 2020 and even the polls leading up to 2020 election, which I did my segment on Jacobin last week before the election, was on this, because I'm looking at the polls and I'm like, wait a minute, Trump is doing better in 2020 with quote unquote
non-white voters. Yeah. Nando, you were Nostradamus with this.
Yeah, I was like looking at the polls, I'm like, wait a minute, that's the discourse is backwards, because he's actually bleeding support amongst white working class voters and gaining support amongst educated whites and blacks and Latinos, especially younger blacks and especially Latino men. And I'm like, wait a minute, this is like the discourse upside down. You know, the discourse has always been that white men, especially white working class men, love Trump and POC, you know, the
because all
speaking,
people
POC
of color
hate
and
are the same.
And I gotta step in because and it's important that people understand that, like, the whole topic of racism, and I say this all the time, and I'm trying to find a better way to explain it, but it's both overrated and underrated.
I know what you mean.
People underrate how many people are racist, but they overrate how important it ultimately is. That's what I think ends up happening. It's like pretty much everybody's kind of fucking racist, but it doesn't manifest itself in a way that like the general discourse sort of would have you think. But go ahead, Nando.
No, I think that's exactly right. And I think that the reason why he bled were white working class support. I mean, he didn't lose it all, but he performed way worse this time, which is why he won, you know, Wisconsin, you know, these kind of the states that are going to ultimately give him the election are the Rust Belt states that Hillary Clinton lost. And the reason why he bled white working class support is because to some degree he won those voters in 2016 with a economically populist message against free trade. You know, they're shipping your jobs away. Blah, 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 blah. And then he didn't deliver on any of that. And so they left. OK, so they were like, that's about as simple as an explanation as you can get. But that's true. Why did he do better with blacks and minorities and Hispanics than he did in 2016? Well, basically, because the Democratic Party offers these people nothing. Literally nothing outside of like what you said, vague kind of anti-racist language.
Let me tell you what the Democratic Party offers
them. It's alienating to a huge amount of actually working class minorities. Like you know, the educated minorities love that kind of stuff. Like, you know, an educated Latino guy who went to, like, you know, a liberal arts college loves, for example, the term Latinx. Like, no working class Latinos actually use that term. Right. They barely even use the term Latino, to be honest. They call themselves, you know, I'm Mexican or I'm Puerto Rican or, you know, they even say, like, quote unquote, problematic terms like I'm Spanish, even though I'm not Spanish.
They'll say
things like, yeah. So
what they offer them is kind of elite-driven, vague anti-racism. The kente cloth kneeling. That is the perfect encapsulation of what establishment Dems are offering voters. We're not Trump. You think Trump wouldn't put on a kente cloth? He would do it in a heartbeat. He wouldn't even think about it. He'd be like, yeah, whatever. Who gives a shit? This is going to keep these people happy. Like, they really think this is the substitute for substantive stuff, right? And again, I think people did poo-poo the economic populist arguments that Trump was making in 2016. They did think it was like it did. It's like, no, like, people hated NAFTA. People legitimately lost their jobs. I'll never forget, man, somebody, a homie of mine, he was talking about his grandfather, and he was like, yo, Waz, this dude was so fucking racist. He hated black people. The only people he hated more than black people were Republicans, because he's a fucking union guy. He was like, I know who my number one enemy is. You know what I'm saying? Like, he was like, he fucking hated Republicans because he understood what they actually stood for, right? And that message was driven to him. But again, the message was being driven to him not by Democrats, but by organized labor.
Yeah.
Right. And the idea that we could ever count on Democrats to actually, you know, do this type of messaging when they're bought and paid for by the corporate class, the ruling class of the country, is tough. But, you know, I do want to get into something that I saw and I tweeted this and I found it kind of funny. I'm we're all over the place, guys, because we just have so many things that we're thinking about and just, it's just a lot going on right now. But, This guy named Peter Hamby, he's the host of Snapchat's Good Luck America. Are you familiar with this dude's work, Nando?
I know this dude's work. He's like Snapchat's political guy.
Okay. He put out a tweet that I thought was just interesting. It's just an interesting read. It reminds me of the NBA bubble, and I'll tell you why. Peter Hamby.
I like where this is going.
Peter Hamby put out a tweet saying, quote, remember how contemptuous progressive pundit campus Twitter was about Biden, Pete, Amy, and their insistence on appealing to moderate voters? That whole conversation feels even more sophomoric and detached from political reality than it did at the time. End quote.
You know, here's where my objection is with that. You know, what moderate voters is code for is like suburban people, like rich suburban people, right?
Right.
And it is true that the Democratic strategy for the last maybe 20 years has been explicit, maybe probably even more actually, has been explicitly to try to win over those voters. Those voters
Clinton,
are typically
92.
Very reactionary.
Actually, some people would say 1985, man. Like, they got their asses kicked by Reagan again. Yeah. It's like, fuck these fucking working class people.
Suburbanized people are are very reactionary. That's just the reality. They live in these like little palaces. Yep. They're afraid of like the inner cities. They think it's like just gangland warfare all the time.
They see their shit as a glass house. Like that can is under attack at all angles.
Yeah. And they own assets, right? So they're very reactionary. Okay, so, but the Democratic Party has been explicitly trying to win these people over. And there is evidence that in the Trump era, especially at the presidential level, they've won over a lot of those voters. That's true. The problem is that they go then, and those voters then, like, yeah, I hate Trump, but I'm going to vote for Susan Collins. I'm going to vote for, you know, 100%. Tillman, or the guy who beat, I'm going to vote for Lindsey Graham. I don't give, you know, these guys are fine. You know, so we just get the situation in which Biden wins the presidency on with a huge upsurge in support for the Democratic ticket in rich suburban areas. But then they vote Republican in the Senate. Am I surprised? No. When you appeal to Republican voters, disaffected anti-Trump Republican voters, by putting John Kasich in your Jesus convention, Christ. Mike Bloomberg in your convention, by touting the endorsement of Rick Snyder, which I want to get to later, you shouldn't be surprised if a lot of those voters then go back and vote for a bunch of Republicans in the Senate, because they see Trump as sort of different. It's always been the mistake that Democrats do, of trying to separate Trump from, like, say, John McCain Republicans or you know, moderate Republicans, quote unquote, or like even George W. Bush, right? Who liberals have like rehabilitated in the Trump era, right? No, you're supposed to tie them to the party. You're supposed to tie the unpopular guy to the party, hang him around their necks. And they do not do that. They did the opposite. They separated them, which is why no one should
be surprised. They're like, Trump is a departure from, I'm like, yo.
Yeah.
And I think, so I'm not gonna lie, I had that moment in 2016 where I felt very disappointed in white people. And very, I was disappointed in Republicans for being Republican, which in hindsight, I realized was silly, stupid, naive, was dumb, because in the moment, it just felt horrible. It just felt like, it felt personal for me. It felt like the vote for Trump was a personal repudiation of the person who I am, the people who I come from, right? Like, it's just a personal attack of, like, fuck you people, right? That's what it felt like. But the reality is, Republicans remain Republican. Donald Trump is not weird. Donald Trump is actually just Rush Limbaugh, who's been dominant with that crowd for 30, going on 40 years now.
Yeah.
Just incarnated, right? It's Newt Gingrich. It's the shit they've been doing. It's Lee Atwater. It's all of that. It's all been leading to this, and their voters have loved it at every freaking turn, right? Like their base voters, not the nice suburbanites in the suburbs of Philadelphia and these other kinds of places. Not those people. Not the people in Staten Island and all of that stuff. Well, no, I shouldn't say that. The people Staten Island. Oh, Lordy.
They love him.
Oh, my goodness, man. He won by 20 points in Staten Island, bro.
Of course. They love him.
It's just this idea that people are surprised. Like, goddamn, like, look at the turnout. Like, Donald Trump got more votes in 2020 than Barack Obama did in 2008. They both broke records for voter turnout. I'm like, bro, this is Republicanism. Like, this is, and I think that's another thing that I think the Dems are going to have to come to terms with, which is what you're trying to say, Nando, is that you're going to have to meet these people where they live. I know that you think people in West Virginia who chew tobacco are icky and have, you know, you might think that they're deplorable and their brains are rotted or whatever you might think, because you're a fancy hoity-toity Northeast liberal, but like, these are the people you're going to need.
The West Virginia stuff is perfect for modern politics, right? Because the modern liberal class, like, say, you know, people who live in the cities and stuff, like, see West Virginia as this, like, frothing at the mouth, racist, toothless hicks, you know, who are like basically feral animals that cannot be controlled. West Virginia is not Virginia today. Is it split from Virginia because of slavery? You know, like people don't realize that the history of West Virginia is actually very left. West Virginia is the hotbed of the American labor movement. It is the heart of the American labor movement in the early 20th century. West Virginia was anti-slavery, pro-labor, voted solidly Dem up until the 90s. That's why Joe Manchin is still there. He's right. Like a relic of that era.
Right.
You know, he's a Democrat. And so the West Virginia was not a Republican state. You know,
West Virginia was the classic FDR base of like he changed those people's lives. And so they were like, fuck that. We're Democrat. You know what I'm saying? Like straight up and down. Like they were that classic FDR base of people for the Democrats.
So this idea that they're just like, you know, irredeemably racist, got to write it off, you know, that's just wrong. That's just absolutely wrong. What has happened in West Virginia is that the coal industry has collapsed. And what has replaced it? Nothing.
Yeah.
Opioid addiction and social collapse and, you know, suicides and all, like basically everyone's life is just way shittier than it was. Therefore, they're cynical and removed from politics, and they don't believe the Democratic Party has their best interests in their heart.
Because they haven't.
Is, by the way, 100% true. So like, you can't blame them for not really voting Dem, because what are the Democratic Party offering them? Nothing. You know, it's literally nothing. And what it gets to my broader point about this idea that Democrats have been running for the longest time on just the Republicans are evil, vote for us to stop the evil, right? This was the case in 2004. Bush was hugely unpopular, and there was this huge backlash towards Bush. The base was riled up, and what did they cough up? Was John Kerry, this kind of like, whatever the fuck. And
rest in peace, John Edwards, man.
Centrist, safe centrist guy, you know, who's not going to offend anyone, and he lost. Same thing in 2020 is like, we're just going to cough up this like safe Joe Biden guy, just run on an anti-Trump platform. I mean, Trump is even more unpopular than George W. Bush, which is why Joe Biden is limping across the finish line and is probably going to win the presidency, even though they're going to lose the Senate and reduce their House lead, which everyone thought they were going to expand. So it's because they're not offering voters anything.
We say it every week.
Every week. So in Florida, which went for Trump. Okay. And in 2018, got a Republican mayor, Ron DeSantis, who is like, you know, insane, and put Rick Scott in the Senate. Yeah. Rick Scott, who was the governor of Florida and was the most unpopular governor in America at the moment. His approval rating was like in the 20s or something crazy like that. Republicans won that state. You know what else? You know what Florida voters also voted for in 2018? Voting rights for felons. You know what they voted for in 2020? By 23 points, a super majority of Florida voters voted to increase the minimum wage to $15 an hour. Okay. Did Joe Biden run on a $15 increase in minimum wage? I mean, it might have been on his website, but
Centrists will say
it's not true. He never talked about it. He never organized around it. He never campaigned on it. I think $15 minimum wage was mentioned one time in the DNC, and it wasn't by Joe Biden or Kamala Harris.
Right.
That they just did not run it. Yeah, they put it on their website so they can then say, like, no, we're for all these things. But they're not really for it because they're not organizing and campaigning for it. They don't reach out to voters and explain to them that they're going to fight tooth and nail to raise the minimum wage to $15. So what happens? The voters are like, well, what are they offering me? This narrative around the Cuban American vote is actually a little misleading. You know, there's 900,000 Cuban Americans in Florida. There's 870,000 Puerto Rican Americans in Florida. Trump got the exact same share of the Cuban American vote in 2020 than he did in 2016. But the collapse for the support for the Democrats collapsed in places like Miami-Dade, probably because other ethnicities just didn't come out and voted for Biden. That's just the reality of it. You got the exact same number with Cuban Americans, like literally the exact same number. So it's not just the reactionary Cubans, of which there are many, you know, but the narrative is a little fuzzy there. And again, if you don't run on anything concrete for people to rally around, if you don't provide them an agenda that is positive, that is going to give them a stake in their own life, that is going to give them a material benefit in some way, you know, this idea that like voters vote against their own interests, no, they don't. What are the Democrats offering them? Literally nothing. Again, literally nothing. Just like vague terms about like, we're going to unite the country, we're going to recover our soul,
Nothing's fundamentally going to change, Nando.
Nothing's fundamentally going to change.
Because everything's so great right now.
Exactly. So,
reason why I mentioned the bubble and that homie from Snapchat's political show, I don't want to be dismissive or disrespect them. It's not like, you know, Woke Bros is fucking, you know, Larry King Live here. But I'm just saying, the reason why what he said reminded me of the NBA bubble is because a lot of the conversations that we've been having as pundits and people that I know who work in the league, around the league I've been talking to, is like, what's the takeaway? And I'll tell you what the takeaway is. If you are the Lakers, if you are the Denver Nuggets, if you are somebody who overachieved or achieved that all in the bubble, it means everything. Right? It means everything. It's like, look at what we did under those conditions. We fucking overcame the odds. Imagine when we got a full training camp. Imagine when people are recovering from COVID. Just imagine what's going to happen. We're going to fucking kill people. If you are a team that underachieved, if you are the Houston Rockets, if you are the Los Angeles Clippers, if you are the Milwaukee Bucks, you get to say, man, they had us sequestered in fucking Orlando. You know, guys were sick. Guys were uncomfortable. Guys were this. There's all the excuses. It's like you get to look at it however you want to look at it. Like me personally, I woke up this morning feeling like Biden eking out a win is actually a win for people like you and me, because cynicism took a loss yesterday. If Biden would have cruised to a victory, overwhelming victory, you know, killed it in Florida, flipped Georgia, flipped Arizona, North Carolina got flipped, all of this shit behind a fucking, the most cynical campaign of my life of just like, we're not Trump. That guy's racist. Yeah. He killed 200,000 people. But like, not. Don't worry about what I'm gonna do. Just like the most cynical campaign I've ever fucking seen. The guy literally hid for months at a time, right? Like, and they just barely eked out a victory. And for me, it's the best of both worlds. Trump is basically defeated. Biden won, but they gotta have at least a little fucking humility about this one. Yeah. I mean, come on, bro. Come on, Wisconsin by 20,000 votes. Come on. You cannot tell me your message is just penetrating the heart of the American people. Come on. And I see on the Hill, there's a report out there on the Hill saying that centrist Democrats talk leadership change after negative election results. You know, they're talking about like, man, Pelosi got to get replaced by Hakeem Jeffries and all this other shit.
Not gonna happen. Well, your point reminded me of something, which is that, let's be clear, if some Chinese guy in Wuhan doesn't eat a bat or whatever the fuck and unleashes a global pandemic,
Trump is dominating, bro.
Yeah, easy cruise to re-election.
Bro, Biden, when he came and basically did the speech in Delaware to be like, yo guys, we're in the catbird seat actually in Wisconsin and Michigan. Sit tight, we good. And I think we're gonna smash him in Pennsylvania. We still looking good in Georgia and all of that. I sat up there, he spoke for 3 minutes, and I was just like, please put the mic down. This dude, like, he's toast. This dude is toast. He's freaking toast.
You think about it, like, it's not that long ago that Trump himself got COVID and infected like his entire administration and his entire family. You know, it's not that long ago that the stimulus for the most historic economic collapse in the history of capitalism ran out, and people are living, you know, on the edge. And he still almost won. Like, come on.
There's got to be some humility here. All right, and we're back, and we have a very special guest for you guys, man. Some of you guys may know Ben as Ben from marketing, but really, he's been a brand strategist for some of the biggest brands in the world. Been in this game for damn near 20 years now. Just a freaking a salesman, if you will. You know, like, that's part of what he does, who he is. And not in the slime ball type of way. It's just like, how do we effectively communicate the mission of some product, right? And you know, we were talking last night, and some of the results are coming in, and it's like the people who we would seem to be able to, and I say we, and I want to say just quickly this joke, right? I'm about to go to sleep last night. It's probably like 11:30 or whatever, and the Wisconsin and Michigan stuff is looking like, all right, Milwaukee County's about to come in. Michigan is basically a bunch of blue counties coming in, looking like Joe is about to squeak this through. And I lay my head on the pillow and I say, man, the Dems really about to squeak this little one out, huh? And my girl said, you're saying the Dems like you're not a part of the Dems. And I was like, I ain't no damn Democrat, but yeah, you know what I mean. I hesitate to use the we with the Dems, but whatever. Anyway, Ben was just saying, like, you know, it seems like there's so many victories with people that would seem to be aligned with a lot of our core missions, or what we would claim to be our core missions, that clearly we failed with. And I think those border towns in Texas are just case in point number one. Like, Hillary dominated those counties. Biden is like squeaking through with like 52% of the vote there. And these are places that are like 95% Mexican people, right? Not all of them are Mexican immigrants or whatever. Some of them are third and fourth generation people, but like, you know, a lot of them would identify as being cowboys for sure, but they're Mexican straight up. They speak Spanish. They feel a connection to the culture, all of that. And they overwhelmingly like Donald Trump more this cycle. And Ben, I just wanted to hear what you had to say about just messaging in general.
So I think it starts with, look at the data. And the data says we did not win any, like, we did not unify anything. All we did was mobilize more people who already agreed with us. But we did not change anybody's mind. We did not recruit in new audiences. And we still barely are squeaking it out. And actually, like, the voter turnout numbers themselves are actually, for me, surprisingly low. Like, I actually thought the way the energy was, it was like we were going to see like a 20 million person increase, whereas we saw like an 8 to 9 million person increase. But with all that being said, you know, Waz, we talk about this all the time, and you brought it up. Republicans have been masters of messaging, right? They're taking away your guns, right? It's gun rights. Like, right? They're taking away your freedom of speech. Fuck political correctness. It's freedom of speech. They're words, sticks and stones, right? Trickle-down economics. Even build a wall. These are simple things. And what we see in marketing is more and more today in a fragmented media world where we have hundreds of media channels. There's not just one. Simple, consistent messaging wins, right? And it takes months and months and months to build repetition in our brains to hammer something home. So part of what you see when we say, like, Trump supporters are brainwashed, they literally are, because their answers to everything are fake news. It's like, we're not even talking about the news, right? What is that an answer to? So the problem is, can any of you tell me what Joe Biden and Kamala Harris ran on aside from we're not racist?
Like, we're not Trump, we're not racist. So essentially, the message is, if you are a brown person, if you are a person of color, and we're just going to go ahead and assume that the number one issue in your life is racism, because everybody knows when you're black or brown or Indian or whatever, racism is just, oh, how are you even doing it with all the racism? you have no choice but to come fuck with the Democrats. That's their thinking, because again, a lot of these people clearly don't know normal, like, they know Indian people in DC. Yeah. They know Indian people in, in San Francisco. They don't know Indian people from Jackson Heights. They straight up do not. They don't know those people. They don't know about the issues that they care about. They don't know them. They just think, because they know, you know, my man Ronak Patel from Stanford, that they know Indian people.
They don't know Indian people from Eastern Pennsylvania. You know what I mean? Right. Like, State College. And I think one of the big problems is, everybody made fun of Trump when he said, what do you have to lose? Yet, oddly, that's actually the brand message that, like, Democrats are putting out.
That works.
But that kind of is what the Democrats are saying, is like, well, we're not racist. Come on over. But in reality, and this is where I think Republicans have, like, a bit of edge, is it kind of is racist to assume that that's the only thing that unifies us.
One trillion percent.
Yeah.
And so when I come back to this, I go, all right, Black Lives Matter is an important statement, right? Like morally, ethically, socially, it's an important statement.
But it's not a winner.
It's not a winner, right? And it also assumes, it makes this assumption that everyone who's of color associates themselves with being Black. Hell, you and I live in New York, right? How many Dominicans you go, uh-uh, Poppy, I'm no Black. Right.
Like, I was saying that to Nando before we actually brought you on. I was like, I'm seeing all this shit on the internet about, well, Latinx identity is very complex. Let me tell you, it's not complex. They know they're not Black. That's one thing they do know. Well,
that's the thing is like, but the thing is, what drives me crazy is that there's often like what you said was like, it's like both overrated and underrated at the same time, but because there's this feeling that, you know, every single community has these unique things and has these unique nuances and whatever. And all that's true, 100%. But if you sort of drive yourself crazy trying to tailor your micro message to like these kind of ever smaller micro communities, you're just going to get muddled and lost. Like at a certain point, we're all human beings and we all kind of want similar things in many ways. Like we want a decent life. We want basic levels of security. Everyone wants like meaningful work with that is well paid and you know, everyone, no one wants to like, you know, get a health scare and go bankrupt as a result. Like that's just, you don't need, like you can be any color or from anywhere and you know, no one wants that. Like no one wants that. So, you know, there's certain things that you can just like assume everyone wants. You can run on those things and then, yeah, tailor your message slightly here and there. You know, when it's applicable to certain issues, yeah, you focus more on certain, but at the end of the day, the sort of big picture things about any human life, which is that we want just a decent life, a family, you know, job security, well-paid, and all these things, like, it's not rocket science. You could just run on that, but the Democrats don't.
And I think what's important to know and delineate, I think a lot of the messaging about, like, this sort of purity test shit that people like to... people were making fun of the left for having purity tests for shit like Medicare for All, but the bottom line is, like, when you are a upper-class Black person, your purity... like, even though your life is materially fine, you want people to acknowledge that I'm a fucking unicorn because I'm Black and I made it. And I need you to acknowledge that. And I want, in a matter of fact, I want you to understand that I'm still fighting the same plight that the people in Brownsville, Brooklyn are fighting, even though I live in motherfucking Fort Greene that has nothing to do with Brownsville anymore, right? Which is like a New York reference, but like, I think the message, the dominant message amongst influential Blacks is that feeling shit, which I'm sorry is just a fucking bourgeoisie concern. Like what people care about is having money in their pockets.
Yeah.
All that shit about like, did that candidate say that Black Lives Matter? That's for y'all bougie motherfuckers. Well, people who really need it. That doesn't resonate for real. And I'm talking about Black people.
You know what it is? It's that in a moment, George Floyd dies. Breonna Taylor dies. You need to be able to say it. That doesn't mean that it's a cornerstone of your campaign saying it, right? Those are things that we just want you to demonstrate on a daily basis. Just demonstrate that you care about Black people and brown people and Hispanic people. Like, but what wins, and this is something that, you know, you guys over the 2 years I've been listening to you and, you know, Waz, 5 years I've been friends with you, I've come to realize is, we have allowed an economic struggle to get divided along race lines, and we play into it on the Democratic side. Obama, regardless of the policies, and I really don't want to litigate whether Obama was or wasn't successful or a good person or whatever.
He won big,
and what he did, a simple message, hope, right? You want hope better. So it lands what I said.
And healthcare.
But yeah, healthcare. But then also, it proved that the majority of these white people who we deem to be racist and whatnot are actually just scared people, right? And they are scared because, yes, their jobs are going away. Yes, they are broke. Yes, they don't have opportunity. Are they a bit better off than Black people of a similar stature? Yes, they are. But that is not what is actually going to motivate them by making them feel inferior or evil or whatever. To win is about acknowledging motivations. And the motivation, as Nando always brings up, is about acknowledging like the economics underlie everything, right? It's kind of like winning cures all in sports. Money cures all in life.
In right? life.
Yeah. Money can buy you happiness. I mean, yeah. You know, like, I mean, there's studies that show like up until like a certain income level, like each additional $20,000 like improves your quality of life to a like unbelievable degree. Yeah. I think it's like, there's like a number. It's like something like $400,000 or $500,000.
No, it's $72,000 is like the peak minimum wage, right, to have a happy life throughout most of the U.S. Obviously, that's not New York and L.A., but like everywhere.
But I mean, like, San Francisco, and then each additional $20,000 like improves your quality of life pretty significantly, and then it kind of flattens off at like $500,000. Like each additional kind of like, you know, the difference between making $1 million and $2 million is nothing really, you know, in terms of your quality of life. But yeah, I mean, it's just so. It's just so obvious, like what's going on. Like, and if you look at the trajectory of the average American in the last 40 years, it's been one of steady decline. It's just no matter who's in power. And Obama was this brief kind of moment of hope in which he ran a very simple message of hope and change to slow and then ultimately reverse this steady decline that has been happening for the vast majority of Americans for 40 years. Right. And then, you know, first term struggled to get anything really done. He passed health care, which was OK. And then he was in a tough reelection fight in 2012. The economy was doing very poorly. He just got smacked in the midterms, and he hyper focused on an economically populist message in the upper Midwest. He hammered over and over and over again that Mitt Romney said, "Let Detroit fail and I build up automakers." You know, it's what he was like. This guy, Mitt Romney, is a rich asshole, billionaire.
It didn't hurt that Mitt Romney was quite possibly the waspiest motherfucker in the history of presidential politics.
Exactly. Like, he's like, that's what he focused on. He didn't talk about like anything else, any social issues, nothing in that campaign was talked about other than Mitt Romney's rich. You're not. He's a fucking asshole. He invented private equity, which has destroyed the American economy, and he wanted to let Detroit fail, even though his father was the chairman of GM. I saved the auto industry. I saved all these jobs. Vote for me. And then he won. He won comfortably.
And that's why I think that it's so important that for the Dems to move forward, and listen, whether we like it or not, there's not going to be a third party in our near term, right? Yeah. So whether we like it or not, we are part of the Democratic establishment, right?
Yeah.
So the key is to find the messages and then the people who can articulate them that are actually going to start aligning poor people against rich people, right? Because there's infinitely more of them. And that's why, as much as at first I was like, universal basic income, I was like, yet $1,000 a month, what the hell is that going to do? Blah, blah, blah. But that's me being idiotic and thinking from a New York perspective, because $1,000 a month doesn't get you a second bathroom in your apartment. But then it's like you go like around the rest of the country. It's like $1,000 a month can pay a 2-bedroom apartment, utilities, a car bill.
Everything.
And so when you start thinking about that, it was like, you know, I almost think the Democratic angle should be an internal facing. You need to figure out what the external language is, but it's like the party of the poor, health, wealth, and education. That's it, right?
Yeah, but Ben, and I agree with you. I just don't know that the party, like the messaging is obvious, because again, a lot of these messages that started within the Democratic Party, a lot of it is Bernie Sanders, but like, Medicare for All polls incredibly well again amongst
Fox News viewers. Did you see that the exit polls that Fox News conducted were 70% of the exit polls showed that they wanted government-run healthcare? Like, it's like, come on! Despite the fact of relentless propaganda from both sides against government-run healthcare, you know, the people still kind of understand that healthcare is something that the government should be doing and not fucking, you know, evil insurance corporations and big pharma.
They learn the lessons it takes them way too long to learn the lessons. Cause you know, I remember 08 and 09 and 2010 when it was, you know, get your government hands off my Medicare. I remember that, you know, like, and it was like, yo, these people are crazy. But guess what? They came around though.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, like, they came around on all of it. Like, when they tried to take away the pre-existing conditions, kicking the kids that are up to, like, 25 or whatever it is off of the healthcare plans, it was like, no, 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 we like all of that shit. So they came around on all of it.
Who doesn't like Social Security, by the way?
Like, no one. It's the most popular. Only rich people don't like it.
Tell me why. Did Joe Biden even mention
Social Security? Nobody talked
about it. He's not trying to take it away in the future. This payroll tax freedom bullshit that they're doing was taken away right now. He didn't mention it. And you know what? White people in the Midwest love themselves some Social Security.
They love social. They love social.
Like, here's my bigger question for you guys to put it back. Like, to me, the messaging is obvious. And I think you have candidates like AOC who, again, I don't agree with everything she says, but what I can acknowledge is she is a brilliant candidate, like as a being to embody messaging. She's
politically talented,
but she's got charisma.
What is the future? Like, where do you find these people to change this? Or do we just have to, like, more or less suck it up that, like, by the way, they're going to run some sort of Donald Trump light in the next election, and they're going to win.
I think Donald Trump is going to win again. He's going to run in the next election.
Man, if he's physically up to it, he would do great again.
Oh, yeah. No, Trump would win a Republican primary. But, like, he would fucking own all of those fucking, you know, are you kidding me? Trump decides to run in 2024. He's winning the Republican primary. Like, mark my words. Yeah. Like, and it won't even be very close. You know, like, he just will own all of those idiots like he did in 2016. So, I mean, that's...
You know what I hope? What I hope to see with AOC, and I'm glad you brought it up. And I think for me, the ultimate lesson with Bernie was that the thing that we loved about him was the thing that sunk him, was that he had no friends. He just was not an insider. The reason why Bernie could be Bernie was that he was not an insider, but it's also why he lost, right? And I think AOC is trying to straddle that fence. She's playing the game. Bernie, why we loved him, because he never, ever, ever, ever played the game. AOC is playing the game right now. Somebody told her that she could be president. And so she's like, she's playing it. I'm watching. I'm like, man, you're pretty good at this shit.
I mean, I think ultimately what sank Bernie, at least in 2020, because in 2016 he got close, was that there wasn't the existential threat of Trump. And, you know, people just didn't quite believe it in their hearts that Bernie could win against Trump with the whole kind of media and Democratic establishment against him. They just kind of didn't really believe it. They couldn't really go there. And so the Democratic primary voters just took the quote unquote safe bet, which is the one that the media told them was the safe bet, which, you know, we always kind of assumed was not very safe because Joe Biden's always been a terrible campaigner.
Were they feeling safe last night?
Last night poured it out, you know, because they fucking squeaked through. I mean, in terms of, like, who's gonna take the mantle, I mean, I think that we're entering into a very unstable phase in our politics, and it's just incredibly difficult to predict what's gonna happen. I mean, I think that there is a very real rupture within the Democratic Party coalition, which is that, you know, the dominant wing of the power centers of the party are older white suburbanite types, and that the base of the party, which is much younger, you know, basically everyone under 45 is, like, far more radical than their parents' generation is. And that coalition coexisting together is going to create all kinds of tensions and all kinds of frictions that are impossible to predict, especially in a near future in which we have a very weak Biden administration dealing with a Republican Senate in the middle of an economic crisis. Right? They're not going to be able to pass any meaningful economic stimulus, which means that we're going to go into a very deep recession, and they're just going to blame the party in power, the vast majority of voters, which we're going to see is going to fuel another furious backlash. And, you know, what that means for the Democratic Party is just very unclear to me. Like, I just don't know. I can't imagine it. I just know that we're in some sort of weird inflection point in our politics in which we're ending a certain era. we're kind of in this weird space, like interregnum space, and a new era will emerge. And it's just impossible to know what it is. I mean, I have my suspicions that it's going to be either just hardcore right-wing nationalism with like pretty authoritarian means to sort of sustain it, or some sort of managed decline of the empire, not to get too like heady about it, but more or less like what the British Empire did after World War II, which was just, okay, we're just going to take care of our citizens. We're going to kind of wind this thing down. We're not going to be like, you know, yeah, they passed the National Health Care, the National Health Service. And like, we're more or less going to take care of our people, and we're just going to, yeah, just retreat and let the Americans take over. And I don't know like what's going to, I honestly have no idea what's going to happen. So,
you know, as we sit here, it looks like they're about to announce that Biden is going to kind of officially, unofficially win, right?
Pre-whatever.
But I think what you're getting at that I'm just so fascinated by, because Waz, you know, we'd talked about this. I was by no means disillusioned. I love Nate Silver. I love data. I love all this stuff, but I was in no way disillusioned to think that the Dems were going to pick up all these Senate seats, because to me, the whole campaign was about just get Trump out of office. This was not about policy change, right? And so if it wasn't about policy change, we were never going to see these Senate seats get picked up.
Yeah.
And with that being said, we're going to end up in another, you know, 2012 version of Obama administration where you're right, nothing gets done, right? So therefore, I don't know what leaders emerge. I don't think Kamala, unfortunately, is going to be able to be tied to a presidency that doesn't do anything and therefore win. I don't think Michelle Obama wants to be any version of Hillary Clinton in the sense of like the wife of a president running for president, you know, all of that. So
also she only has downsides. There's only downsides for Michelle, you know, like she's unbelievably popular. We'll go down in history as like this beloved figure. If she runs for president, that's changing, you know? Yeah.
And so I don't know where this comes from, but the only thing that was surprising to me, and everybody should look at the actual exit poll data, for all the hubbub about young people. Now, whether this is because Bernie didn't win the nomination or not, I think young people voted at like a 34%, right? Like under 35, right? So like, let's not pretend like these young people with radical ideas, with passions, like they love a march because it looks good on Instagram. This is not like, people who are actually out here to actually make change.
Well, but they're not. But that's exactly why they're not pulling the lever for Joe Biden. I mean, because Joe Biden doesn't represent that at all. I mean,
yeah, but then you could.
Yeah, he doesn't make them feel good.
We're asking people to pull the lever. Like, American politics is just conditioned around this idea that you're supposed to pull the lever for people who like basically are actively hostile towards you, you know, and that's just not how voters behave in any democracy, not just in the United States. You know,
do you
like
think they
people
really
don't
understand
vote.
That though. Do you think they
no?
Really
yeah,
understand
I mean, it's on some. Yeah, I mean, he says it all the time. He doesn't represent anything that they stand for at all. You know, like not stylistically.
It's not hard to know where Joe Biden really stays. Like, he's been around too long. Like, he can't even – I think Kamala Harris can feign some type of
–
you know what? I'm
she
actually
fell on her
this.
Face in the primary. She didn't even make it to the first, voting. She had to end her campaign because she was polling at, like, 3%, even though she had all this momentum. You know, like going behind her. I thought she was going to be a better candidate, but she didn't.
But Nando, I'm speaking of Kamala Harris. You guys want to hear some great fanfic?
Yes.
I'm hoping that somehow when she becomes, she's eventually going to become the standard bearer for the party. Because Joe Biden, amongst many other things, he is fucking toast. He's out on his feet, man. Yeah. Like that dude is no disrespect to the elderly, man. He's done. Yeah. He's finished. Right. And so there's going to be some type of handoff to Kamala Harris. And Kamala Harris fanfic that I've been spinning since last night, guys, is that her big commie socialist
father is the mole.
Finally.
Yeah, he's been building her in a lab.
He was the mole
the
whole time, guys.
He's been building her in a lab for 40 years.
one of the biggest Marxists in the country. A lot of people don't know this, but like Kamala Harris's dad is literally a Marxist scholar. Like literally one of the most famous Marxist scholars in America. Her father
is. So is Pete Buttigieg's
and so
dad.
Before
Pete Buttigieg,
Pete Buttigieg, Pete Buttigieg too, which
dad
is like,
translated Gramsci to English. You know, like that was his contribution.
That's just mind blowing. But yeah, her dad finally, he was the mole the whole time that the Cubans were scared of.
Talk about Russian, you want to talk about a Russian operation? That's the fucking.
Is this the American season 9? Is that what you guys are describing?
Yeah, exactly.
Right,
like, there's a chip in Kamala Harris. As soon as she becomes president, she's like, "Whoa, I'm gonna nationalize the means of production."
Joe Biden's like attorneys walking around the office right now.
Yeah, crazy. Anyway, man, so that's our show for this week, guys. Definitely want to thank Ben for coming on with us and just sharing his thoughts. It's looking like Joe Biden and the Dems are going to eke this thing out miraculously. Nando Vila, as always. Rob on the ones and threes, man. I'm sorry, Rob. We're going to be blaming Hispanics for a minute, man. I'm sorry. Y'all going to have to take this one. We'll see you guys next week. Make sure you become a Patreon of Count the Dings, countthedings.com/Patreon. Make sure you're listening to Let's Pot It Out, Nando's incredibly genius, hilarious Entourage podcast, man. And just make sure you're checking out all of our offerings, whether it be Pack Your Knives, whether it be the Friday Mailbag, whether it be Cinefold, whether it be the Dad Pod. Make sure you're checking out everything we do over here, man. We'll see you guys next week. We're out of here.